Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanz in Washington, working on this program very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, March 8, 2022. Some leaders in South Sudan say the conflict in the country has affected women.
We cannot celebrate when our own very women, our constituency, the people who voted for us in 2010, are under the trees, under the verandas, under the bushes.
And women leaders in northern Bahr el-Ghazal state are remembering a young girl shot dead in Lake State on this International Women's Day.
We are very disappointed here in northern Bahr el-Ghazal. We women in a will, we are not happy. So we leave everything to the hand of the government to do its investigation.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Today is International Women's Day, and some South Sudanese women leaders from Eastern Equatoria State say Magui County won't celebrate the day because many women are living in dire conditions after recent attacks by armed cattle herders from the neighboring Jonglei State. Grace Abalang, a member of the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, says South Sudanese women suffered during the country's struggle for independence, adding it's time the government takes women issues very serious. Viola Elias reports for VOA from Juba.
A member of the Transitional National Legislative Assembly from Eastern Equatoria, Grace Abalang, says women in her state do not have any reason to celebrate International Women's Day.
We cannot celebrate when our own very women, our constituency, the people who voted for us in 2010, are under the trees, under the verandas, under the bushes. So in particular for me, Grace, I'm not celebrating, and I'm dedicating this day for the women of Magui and the women of Torit. Because this problem is not only in Magui, it started in Torit, in Payam of Kudo, which is Lowoi, and then it moves to Magui.
Beatrice Abe, another lawmaker representing Magui County in the National Parliament, says after South Sudan's leaders signed the Revitalized Peace Agreement, women leaders expected South Sudanese citizens to peacefully coexist. But unfortunately, Abe says some communities in South Sudan consider themselves superior to other communities. Abe describes the recent violence in Magui County as horrific, where armed herders burned houses, killed innocent residents and displaced hundreds of people from their land.
I know even that old woman who was burnt in the house. It has been so painful to me. It has really been so devastating to me. So this thing is not good. What is happening in South Sudan is not a good thing. While we celebrate Women's Day and the women are being treated like that, they are being killed in such a manner, and those who are now in the bushes with small children, those who are delivering in bushes, those who are delivering in verandas under trees are many. This is the most worst year for me in the history of South Sudan with the Women's Day, where instead of celebrating the beauty of a woman, you are celebrating the pains of women, what women go through.
Abe says she wonders if a person who commits such atrocity deserves to be forgiven and to coexist in society with others. She says South Sudan has nothing to celebrate today when killing continue at a time when suffering should be a thing of the past and citizen and government are focused on nation building.
Now we are in the era of nation building, and this thing happens to our women, including all the women. It is devastating. To me personally, I have nothing to celebrate. To me, the struggle continues. The struggle is not over.
Abe notes that South Sudanese women have suffered enough, and it is time for the government to take women's issues, including their security and welfare, more seriously. Eastern Equatoria state leaders say armed pastoralists attacked Abara Boma a week ago, killing 5 people and burning several houses. Eastern Equatoria Governor Luis Lobong condemned the attack, which he said led to the displacement of more than 6,000 members of the host community, including many women. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Still on women issues, the United Nations says 32% of women in sub-Saharan Africa are likely to have the same as men. The UN says women and girls experience the greatest impact of climate change as it increases existing gender inequalities and puts women's lives at risk. Maureen Ojiambo has more on this story.
Today on International Women's Day, UN women and the world are coming together under the theme Gender Equality Today for a Sustainable Tomorrow. The United Nations say more women are needed to take up positions such as environment ministers, business leaders, presidents, and prime ministers so that they can push countries to address the climate crisis, develop green jobs, and build a more just and sustainable world. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says that across the world, women are still underrepresented in many sectors in which they serve.
But we also recognize that in too many areas, the clock on women's rights is moving backwards. They face rising poverty and rising violence. They do the vast majority of the world's unpaid but essential care work. They are targets of violence and abuse just because of their gender. In all countries, women are scandalously underrepresented in the halls of power and the boardrooms of business. Starting now on International Women's Day, it's time to turn the clock forward for every woman and girl.
In Kenya, the gender gap index score increased to 0.69 in 2021, which means that women are 30% less likely to have the same opportunities as men in the country. Ruth Manoti, a gender and human rights activist in Kenya, says rural women face more challenges when it comes to equality and property ownership.
Today on International Women's Day, I want to recall of the many challenges that women still undergo on this 21st century. For example, we still have an issue around women and property rights. Just a few months ago, in one of the villages here in Kisii, we had three old women being burnt on false claims. Yet it was all about issues around property. They were literally torched. And where does that leave us in this day and age?
Manoti says Kenyan women have been sidelined when it comes to leadership, including being members of county assemblies.
In the county I come from, for the past 10 years, we have not had an elected woman leader. Not a member of parliament, not an MCA. All the women we've had are the woman rep whose position is made available for by the constitution. What does that tell us in this day and age where women are equally educated, equally exposed, with equal capacities? That means we still have a lot to do with our brains as a young woman. These are things that I'll want to see change.
At the same time, Kenyan women today are holding demos after a lady driver was stripped naked by men said to be motorcycle operators known in Kenya as Boda Boda. In a viral video taken at the scene, the woman is seen screaming and men are undressing her. Authorities in Kenya have since condemned the incident, as police say the lady driver knocked down a pedestrian, which prompted Boda Boda riders to confront her. UN Women Executive Director Sima Sami says that climate change affects the well-being of women and girls across the world.
On International Women's Day, we celebrate the power and potential of women and girls. The accelerating crisis of climate change and environmental degradation are disproportionately undermining the rights and well-being of women and girls. They are multiplying insecurity at all levels, from individual and household to national.
According to a report by the Global Partnership for Education, women are responsible for 60% of work done globally, yet they earn just 10% income and own 1% property. The group says that 70% of women in Africa are excluded financially. The continent has a $42 billion US dollar financing gap between men and women. And with this year's Women's Day theme being gender equality today for a sustainable tomorrow, the world is working towards bridging the gap of inequality between men and women. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
Some women leaders in northern Bahr el-Ghazal state are remembering a young girl who was shot in Lake State this week. The police spokesperson in Lake State says two police officers have been detained following the incident. Major Elijah Mabor says two young women were among passengers traveling from Awil town to Juba in a private vehicle over the weekend. A police officer on patrol opened fire on the vehicle, killing one person and injuring two others. William Sande Mabor reports for VOA from Rumbek.
Lake State Police spokesperson Major Elijah Mabor Makwai says a private vehicle bearing registration number SSD-138BJ set off from a wheel town toward Juba Saturday, and upon reaching a Rumbek town runabout, the driver took Rumbek North route thinking he was heading to Juba. The vehicle passed Maper town, where a heavy deployment of security forces is stationed following violent clashes last month between armed youth from Rumbek North and Tony East counties. Makwai says a police chief in the area was suspicious of a commercial vehicle and asked his men to follow it. He says the driver of the private vehicle realized he had lost his way and drove back towards Rumbek town. He says officers deployed along the road tried to stop the driver, who continued driving, prompting one officer to shoot. Makwai says the policeman killed a young woman identified as Akon Deng Kwaj and injured two other passengers. William Koji Kirjok, the Lagos State Information Minister, condemned the shooting and says officer who opened fire has been arrested.
The government regrets of the incident number one, the loss of the driver to a very wrong direction, different to Maper, which is 25 miles away from Rumbek Center town, was very unfortunate. Also, within Rumbek North currently, it has not been visible. The driver reached there at midnight, maybe the security forces might be wondering, because they said the driver could not stop and all that, but we were not expecting the police to shoot the vehicle or shooting at them before them shooting at the police.
Kirjo called the incident a great loss to the Awil community. Several people commenting on social media blamed Lagos State government for doing little to end violence in the area. But Minister Kirjok says Lagos State is peaceful and called the incident unfortunate.
In the 8 June 2021 up to date, there was no incidences of road ambushes, community violence, cattle raiding. It has stopped from that day. So the situation is very unfortunate for the safety officers to divert the point to a different thing. But what we are saying, Lagos State is peaceful. The armed youth have never resumed road ambushes or attacks. Anyway, they are peaceful, they are in control, and the laws of the state is in place.
Kirjo criticized Facebook users who are condemning Lagos State authorities and accused some of them of using hate speech, noting that one officer fired his weapon in the incident. The Northern Bahr el-Ghazal State Police spokesperson Guat Akol says the Awil government condemn the incident and urge Lagos State authorities to ensure perpetrator faces justice.
It is unfortunate incident. Good enough, we shall applaud my colleagues from Rumbek that they took decision already, and the culprit has been apprehended, which is a good move. The people here in Northern Bahr State are calm and are waiting for authorities and the justice to prevail. That person has to be questioned by the law. Why he fired directly at the towards the relocation of the driver? There could have been some circumstances that he would have taken to slow down the vehicle if the claim was the overspeeding.
Akol says the South Sudanese National Police Service is mandated to carry firearms and to protect civilians, not to kill them.
The reason that we are mandated by the law to carry firearms is to protect civilians, not to use the firearms against them. These are the very people, these are the taxpayers of the country, and these are the people that we are mandated to hold the guns and investigate crimes on their behalf.
While commemorating the International Women's Day on Tuesday, women in Northern Bahr el-Ghazal State gathered to visualize the woman killed by the officer. The woman wore T-shirts bearing the image of Akon Deng, Awut Kwel, head of a women's organization in Northern Baralgazal State, tells South Sudan in Focus that women are calling on the government of Lagos State to do more to prevent violence in the area.
We are very disappointed here in Northern Baralgazal. We women in a will, we are not happy. So we leave everything to the hand of the government to do its investigation. Why shoot a young girl who is not holding a gun? The death of our daughter is very bad, and we need the result as soon as possible from the government.
Quayle says the government should release the result of their investigation into the shooting as soon as possible. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabur in Rumbek, Lagos State.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. What is the impact of biodiversity on countries in Africa? That story is lined up after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. A group of major environmental groups at the UN Conference on Climate Change held recently in Nairobi says high consumption nations should provide at least $60 billion annually to address biodiversity loss. Brian O'Neill is the director of the international environmental coalition called Campaign for Nature. He spoke with Ricky Shryock about what is needed to stem biodiversity loss in countries throughout Africa and the other low-consumption countries where most of the world's biodiversity remains better conserved.
There is a very large gap in how much the world needs that biodiversity and how much we currently spend. Much of that gap can be made up with redirecting subsidies that are harmful to nature, subsidies that prioritize oil and gas drilling or mining or industrial scale agriculture that are being done in a way that is driving biodiversity loss. There's also, in addition to that, money that governments need to put forward, that they need to invest in biodiversity conservation, both domestically and internationally. Today, we were calling for $60 billion of additional resources from wealthy nations to developing countries, because that's where most of the world's biodiversity is concentrated, in the developing world. And in addition, that wealthy nations, through international trade and through our high levels of consumption, are driving the loss of biodiversity far beyond our borders. When our diets, our consumption in the United States has big impacts in Malaysia, in Indonesia, in Latin America, from the agriculture and the timber and the minerals that we consume daily. So in some ways, we're exporting our footprint of nature degradation.
Money and consumption kind of caused this problem. Is it possible to solve the problem with money, or is there a need to reconfigure lifestyles and ideas of living?
Really great question. It's absolutely, we can't just throw money alone at the problem. We have a responsibility to address our impact financially, but we also have a responsibility to reduce our impact. And that means we have to look at where our food comes from, where the materials we consume come from, and have a better understanding of the impact that's having on nature around the globe. We can't continue at this unsustainable pace and expect to have a thriving environment. If we continue this level of destruction, we stand to lose up to 1 million species, many within the next decade, permanently becoming extinct. We'll also lose a lot of the services that nature provides, clean water, protection from storms.
Could you give me an example of what kind of, you know, where you guys want this $60 billion to go?
You know, Africa has thousands of protected areas, many of which have a shortfall in their management. So managing and planning for protected areas. This money can also go for indigenous peoples and local communities to secure titling and land rights to their land. This money can go to restore forests that have been degraded, places like in Cameroon where we've had forest concessions that have been cleared. This money can be used for reforestation with native species, so the forest mirrors the original forest that was there, and it helps bring back biodiversity. So it has a broad range of areas that it can be used for. In the marine environment, it can help to protect and restore mangroves, which are critically important. In Mozambique, for instance, during the typhoon, the areas with intact mangroves had much less of an impact from the typhoon than areas where that were degraded.
That was Brian O'Donnell, the director of the International Environmental Coalition called Campaign for Nature. He was speaking to Ricky Shryock from Nairobi. Thousands of women have staged another wave of anti-military protest in Khartoum Tuesday. Some of the protesters used the occasion to pay tribute to women on International Women's Day while denouncing the October 25th military takeover. Rael Moaz is a civil society activist and human rights defender who participated in the protest in Khartoum.
The significance of the protest today is to highlight women's demands and to assure that women's demands are at the essence of the Chinese people's demands from freedom, peace, and justice. And that's why a lot of women are joining this campaign to advocate for other women to join the resistance committees and be at the heart of the decision-making that's happening currently politically in Sudan. Because a lot of women are not in the resistance committees and male dominated, but we're trying to make the participation of women not just on the streets. They need to be on inside the resistance committees and have that role of decision making inside of it, not just as a crowd for the protest.
And as an activist and as a woman, what is on your mind today and what message Sudanese women are sending? You spoke of demands. What are those?
Well, Sudanese women are demanding freedom, peace and justice, of course, as every Sudanese person here in Sudan. But as well as that, we're also demanding to be the mainstreaming of women's rights. To be at the heart of every decision made in by the resistance committees, by the political actors here in Sudan, if they're one of the signees of the Jobbik agreement, or they're also at the any other political party. That's basically what's happening today, because we feel neglected as women, and we feel that we're just being told what to do, and men are just dominating everything related to the political sphere.
Yes, I would like to pick up on your last point about women being neglected. The December 2018 revolution.
Yeah.
And the subsequent civilian-led government that was formed brought a lot of hope for Sudanese women. We saw a woman sitting on the Sovereign Council, the ruling body, which is basically Sudan's shared presidency.
Yeah.
We saw a woman governor in River Nile State, up in the north. And we've seen a woman leading the judiciary as Chief Justice. But now my question, how did the October 25th military takeover affect women in Sudan? How has it affected women? Are we back to square one?
When the freedom and the forces of freedom and change made their declaration, it stated that they will be abiding by the percentage of 40% in the Legislative Council, but the Legislative Council was never formed. In the transitional period, the Jobbik agreement came and mainstreamed the 40% across all levels of authority and power. They never actually had the will to actually enforce what they stated in their the constitutional document, because the constitutional document says that the 40% is in the Legislative Council, but that never happened. But the Duba Beach Agreement is above the constitutional document, and that's written on it. In my opinion, that was just them using women to show how advanced they are to the West and to the other to the rest of the world. So that's why mainly women don't feel nothing has changed for us in the transitional period, to be honest.
There were laws that were repealed, for example, that historically suppressed
some
women.
Some of the advancements that happened during the transitional period were hindered by the 25th of October military coup. That's for sure. But we still are neglected by the same political parties, by the same resistance committees, and we're trying to get inside these spaces to enforce our agenda from within these institutions, if you can call them that.
This year's International Women's Day is celebrated under the theme Gender Equality Today for a Sustainable Future. How do you see the future for Sudanese women? Are you hopeful?
I can see the change in the tone from the recent committee when talking about women's agenda. And now I think that all the political parties, although we can never trust what they're actually saying, because what they're doing constantly contradicts with what they're saying. But I can see the sense of and the change of tone when talking about women's agenda. There's more awareness about some decisions related to participation of women inside in the transitional government. Because the demands of the revolution, it's the demands of all Sudanese people, and that includes women, and we have a major role within this revolution. But when it comes to decision making, we're not part of it. I think that they now know that this was maybe one of the major parts of why we're in a political stagnation. Many different parties in the last couple of weeks talking about the importance of women representation and participation to solve the current political crisis that's happening in Sudan. So I think the future will be brighter.
That's Real Mwaz, a human rights activist in Khartoum, speaking with Nabil Biagio in Washington. That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now end this show with Victoria Ole and the song Oh Mama. We've been listening to Victoria Ole and the song Oh Mama. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.